Welcome to Scribe Session. Here, Inquirer Bengals beat writers Joe Reedy and Paul Daner Jr. escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily, all with the sidecar of sarcasm you've come to expect. Let's go.
Let's get ready to rumble! Feel the fires into the rear!
He'll gun it deep downfield for A.J. Green. A.J.'s got it! Touchdown! Bengals! Dalton in the shotgun, two receivers left, two to the right. Andy straight back to throw. Fires for Gresham in the end zone! Touchdown! Bengals! And Reedy burst up the middle of the field. Look out! Reedy's off to the races.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. Of course, Paul Daner Jr. here with you. Joe Reedy now with me. Joe, how are you?
Good, Paul. How are you doing?
You know, we're doing all right because it's a bye week. The long-awaited bye week. We've struggled through a long season and a rigorous road trip schedule to finally come across a week where we can sort of relax a little bit anyway.
Feels like a little Joe Cocker. It's going to be all right.
I think it is going to be all right. You know, everything's going to be okay. But the Bengals are feeling much better after the 41-20 drubbing put down on the Cleveland Browns thanks to a new franchise record for points in a quarter, 31 points in the second quarter.
Was it a franchise record for longest quarter, too?
I mean, it was most absurd quarter. I mean, you could probably go with that if you're looking at three first downs and 31 points. And we decided maybe the new WAR stat, if we're, everybody that's into advanced stat metrics, if you were looking at this game, we go points per first down is going to be our new special stat. In that quarter, Bengals 10.33 points per first down. It's just they held the ball for 3 minutes and 42 seconds. It's just remarkable. Special teams, defense, story of the day in this one.
Yeah, and on a day when the offense wasn't its best, and that's putting it lightly,
right.
The fact that they were able to score 41 points and be dominant at home and now go up 2.5 games in a division is, I don't want to say encouraging. It's they did what they had to do, but... It'll be interesting. They did what they had to do. Jason Campbell looked like the Jason Campbell he remembered. And for those fans of Cleveland who were ready to buy Jason Campbell jerseys with Elite on the back, I hope they I love Browns fans and everything, and I know they're fervent, but this probably knocked them down a peg or two.
Well, I think it's one of those where – it just goes to show how long it really has been since they've had any sort of decent quarterback. If you are literally writing columns that mention him as an elite quarterback, that's, boy, it's a long time since Bernie Kosar.
Well, and if you had a 12-game losing streak to the Ravens and all of a sudden you win, I mean, we're not putting statues of Jason Campbell up in public square in Cleveland, but
they were close.
Yeah, but the whole calling Jason Campbell lead. No. You needed the Bob Lang. Whoa.
Yeah. Yes, I will say this. I think entering this game, you'd ask any Bengals fan after the last 2 weeks. With the way the division was breaking down and the possibility that a loss on Sunday could have opened up a Pandora's box of letting everybody back in, that win was one of the biggest swing wins that this team has seen, and certainly this year, because it changes everything. Now the division, you're up 2.5 with 5 to go, three teams sitting there at 4-6 behind you. I mean, it is lock and key at this point. A couple more wins, and you have three or last five games at home where you're undefeated. You are sitting pretty. Things it didn't matter how it happened. It just needed to happen in the old Battle of Ohio. That's the way it goes. Because now, you know, Joe, we like to have our songs here every week. I feel like this win, and what it did for the Bengals, I think it has them reverting back to the '80s, and I think it has them singing maybe a little Janet Jackson.
Well, how many of these players were alive when this Janet Jackson song came out?
I think a few of them are alive, and I bet a few of them still find her pretty darn hot.
Were you alive when this Janet Jackson song
yes.
came out?
Yes, okay, I was okay. alive when Control came out.
Okay.
I was born in 1980. I mean, come on now. I grew up enjoying Janet Jackson, Miss Jackson, if you're nasty, of course. I don't want to,
you don't remember her. Janet Jackson, though, on Different Strokes.
I watched some Different Strokes, but I wasn't quite computing Janet at that point.
Or Janet Jackson as Penny on Good Times?
No, that one I didn't have as much of. I'll give you that. You've got me there on that one. But, I do remember, the sauciest of the early MTV videos.
Oh,
When MTV got big, they went Anytime, Any Place came out on MTV in like early 90s, which was very, very... it was over the top. MTV really was just getting risque all over the place. But all that stuff from her in the '80s was pretty out of control.
And Janet Jackson, Paul, kind of did the early shedding the, innocent teen thing and going full on. And she started it, and then we've had some singers like Britney and, Miley Cyrus who have totally obliterated that line between innocence and full-on adult. I'll try to be kind and go full-on adult, but
and this being an NFL podcast, she's very relevant.
Oh yeah,
one of the great moments in Super Bowl history.
Yes,
the wardrobe malfunction, which were you in attendance at wardrobe malfunction?
I was not, but if you want the recent run of crappy Super Bowl halftime shows, you can thank Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake for that.
I thought there were a few good Super Bowl halftime acts. The Who, I thought, was pretty strong. Even though they're getting up there, I'm such a Who fan.
I was at that one, and it was okay. It wasn't great. And I do have to say, between what you watch in the stadium and what you get on TV are two different things.
It's a made-for-TV event more than anything, almost.
Yes, because you were, I think you were at the Indy Super
Bowl. I was at the Indy, the Madonna light show.
Yes.
That's all I remember.
I just remember an ungodly amount of bass pumping in that stadium.
Yeah. So we went a little bit off track here, but still... Super Bowl halftime this year is
Bruno Mars. Yeah, and I'm just waiting, Paul, to see how many guitars freeze during that game and trying to do Bruno Mars. let's just bring that halftime stage out in a snowstorm.
Still wondering how the heck Super Bowl in New York is going to work out. It will be a fun. Well, the Bengals at least look like they're going to be in the tournament, though, to get there. I mean,
barring a major collapse, and well. You never know, but
you do know.
Let's be positive.
You're right. I mean, anything could happen, but with this win, as Janet told you, they're in control. They look all grown up right now. That's where it is. This was a team that found a way to win in different ways. You mentioned the offense struggling. They did, but you had Vontaze Burfict with his plays, his fumble forced and recovered for a touchdown, including the trooper butt slap attempt that occurred. And then you have, of course, you had the blocked punt by Jason DeMunch, returned by Tony Dye for a touchdown. And James Harrison had one of the biggest plays in the game, his interception, a ball that was tipped by Michael Johnson. and he took it. That really flipped the tide of 13-0 that turned into 31-13. But a funny run-in with James Harrison, who can sometimes be very funny to talk to in the locker room.
Yes.
both good and bad, but a funny run-in with him afterwards. He didn't even know who Tony Dye was.
Yeah.
He said, who is number 44? Ask, well, who's Tony Dye? He says, who? And he says, oh, yeah, number 44? Is that who? I mean, it's and you know what it is? You know what it brings up? It brings up one of my favorite clips that we have here that we like to run. And you know what? Trying to remember the names of every single player on the team is for James Harrison.
Pain in the double A-S-S.
That's right. Pain in the double A-S-S. Still one of my favorite from Hard Knocks.
Yes, but I don't even think that got onto Hard Knocks. We were asking him about
it did
Hard
not.
Knocks, and we
it did not from our Hard Knocks time of covering yes. it certainly.
But James, he has nicknames for guys, and if you mention numbers, I think he's good that way. But James likes snappy and quick flowing press conferences and
yes.
stuff. That if you give him 5-10 seconds, he's going to turn around and say, I'm done, which almost happened on Sunday until I tried to get James to be a little philosophical, just, hey, you know, you were an undrafted guy, kind of labored for a couple years. Do you remember your first game? And he kind of looked at me strangely. What are you asking? It's like, no, the first time you suited up, what was
right.
it like? He's like, that was 11 years ago. I can hardly remember that.
Yeah. Next question, pretty
well,
much.
And it's like, because I'm like, I kind of went, can you kind of, as a player, go through like what Tony Dye's feeling right now? And you look at me like, what are you asking? And it's like, okay, you were an undrafted free agent, labored for a couple years. That first game that you finally got to suit up, what was it like?
Yeah.
And he's like, because Doc was there too, so I'm trying to help Doc and feed him something
oh,
for
yes.
his column. You
feed
know,
him the fodder.
Team Inquirer trying to help each other.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, I can't remember that far. Okay,
fair enough. Fair
Thanks,
enough.
James.
Thanks, James. Talk to you later. But I think.
But that interception return, though.
Just
you want a man's interception return?
Absolutely frightening stuff for everyone in the
yes.
stadium. I don't care, Bengals fan or not. I mean, that is the ultimate never meet this guy in a dark alley moment. I mean, just absolute beast mode.
Yeah, where I can only imagine James with the 300 acupuncture needles and trying to get at him that way.
Well, Witt was funny today talking about the one-on-one that Harrison had with Alex Mack, basically saying, yeah, now he knows what I've been going through for the last however many years trying to block James Harrison. That guy is not easy to stop. And shoot, sort of makes you think maybe there's a goal line back that the Bengals might have in the linebacker core. Could you imagine trying to stop that guy? He just is when he decides he's going to do something, it's going to happen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And
most snaps he's played as a Bengal yesterday. I mean, he that was the biggest impact game he's had since joining this team.
Yeah, I mean, recovered a fumble last week against Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
Had the key fourth down play in the Buffalo game earlier in the year. It's, you know, for a Sam linebacker, he's playing about the amount of snaps that Manny Lawson did, but he's being used with more versatility and stuff. But we didn't expect him to come in and be an all-pro, all-world, and be the James Harrison of old. But if he was solid enough and does like he is doing right now, I think for this defense, that's good enough.
And his versatility is proving pretty valuable with the injuries of the defensive line because they've been able to move him to the inside on those jet rush packages, the nickel package, where him and Gilberry are running the inside with Dunlap and Johnson on the outside.
Huge assist to Wallace Gilberry on the Vontaze Burfict fumble recovery and touchdown, too, because Gilberry kind of slowed him down, was mm-hmm. trying to bring him down, and then Tez went in there with the shoulder and forced the ball loose.
Injuries continue to happen. Defense keeps making plays. It really doesn't seem to matter. It doesn't seem to phase them. It's just different guys end up with their names in the score sheet and talking to us afterwards. But, you know, kind of along those lines, I wanted to touch on something because I wanted to get to special teams and we have documented this year the evolution of this special teams group. It's the biggest purge that that Darren Simmons, the special teams coordinator, has seen since 2010, when the likes of Pierman and Miles and that whole group came in. The group that formed such a great unit last year, and there's still some remnants of it here now. But it with that and the injuries, it's been a rough go of it for him to try and get these young guys all on the same track. Orson Charles, Jason DeMonch, Sean Williams, your chief three, probably amongst those, playing their first real dose of special teams, and certainly their only dose of NFL action. So it's been a challenge, and it's had lots of ups and downs. There have been a ton of penalties. Drake Kirkpatrick should fall in that bunch. He's made a lot of penalties on special teams as well.
Oh, yeah.
But he's made a few plays. He's starting to get a little bit more of a feel out there. But bottom line, the roller coaster it has been. You need a sick bag if you're Darren Simmons, and you've probably seen him nearly vomiting on the sideline or some of the stuff that's been going on. But this was they've had some moments, but this was the first game where they kind of threw the team on the back a little bit and made the huge plays. Jason DeMonch, Sean Williams, Tony Dye, fresh off the practice squad, coming in and making plays that it seemed like they turned the corner. And that was something we talked to Darren Simmons about after the game, a little bit about some of the strategy and what happened and why the special teams had such a big day, and then kind of got into the bigger picture of this unit sort of coming into its own. So here's Darren Simmons from after the game on Sunday.
Sean gets a piece of that one punt, and then it opens the floodgates for Jason.
Yeah, well, I think it's like it is with anything. You know, sometimes when there's blood in the water, you know, those guys feast and they really pin their ears back and go. Whenever I call a rush or call something for where they're coming, well, they know they got the opportunity to go block a punt, go affect the game in a big way that way. And sometimes Sean Williams and Jason DeMonch, they don't have that opportunity, you know, except in that phase. So when you call those things, you know, their sense of urgency gets lifted up there pretty good. It gets ratcheted up, and I think it's happened on both those plays.
So both straight rushes on those, the one he got a piece on? And
yeah, I mean, they're rushes. We beat their guy.
Okay.
You know, it's plain and simple.
How good was it to see Tony Dye? I mean,
Tony Dye
called up for his first NFL game.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's being in the right position at the right time. We get a lot of guys in who've, you know, I've been in a hell of a lot of more battles with than I've been in with Tony Dye, and he got himself into position and made a play. So I was very happy for him. You know, any time that happens to people like that, it's a good thing.
I mean, second quarter, the two blocks, Pac-Man gets a good return and get Nugent with the field goal.
Well, I think it's always about field position and momentum. You know, things didn't start off exactly where we wanted them to, I don't think. And you know, when you get opportunities to go make plays, and those guys kind of help flip that, and you know, you can see how it incites the team and incites the crowd, because it's sometimes you get plays from guys where you don't expect them. You know, so it was good. And Jason's been working on. If you remember, Jason's been close a couple times. He was real close last week too. You know, and that's something he takes a great deal of pride in. You know. I think I don't want to embarrass Jason by saying this, but these guys, they write their notes out to me, and they give them to me every week, so I look at them. And these guys, these young guys, have spent a ton of extra time with me trying to get things right and get things ready. And the last thing that Jason wrote down on the bottom of the screen was, block a punt to help win the game.
Was that this week?
That was this week.
On his notes?
Yeah. Well, we did.
With those young guys, you've talked a lot about the roller coaster of them,
yeah,
the ups and downs. Is this sort of the flip side, a rewarding flip side of that for you?
Yeah, big time, I think, because it's reassurance. I think it reaffirms everything. Like I said, all that extra time they've put in, it now is coming to fruition. You know, and it's good to see. Yeah, we made a couple plays today. When, you know, this wasn't the Super Bowl. We made a couple plays today. But it's good to see those guys, you know, growing up right in front of us a little bit. I think that's a positive thing. And it's good to see that they're bearing the fruits of all that extra time they put in.
Do you feel like you've weathered the storm a little bit of the rough waters?
You never weather the storm. You never weather the storm. No, I don't think you feel. I never feel like you ever weather the storm.
Yeah.
You know, are the worst times behind us? I hope so.
Yeah.
But I don't think in the job that I have, I don't think you ever weather the storm.
This can be a huge development for this team, Joe. I mean, and we see it every year, but when young players start coming into their own and developing, it can change playoff races.
Yeah, and you know, Vinny Ray's been patiently biding his time on special teams, and you see the play that he's doing now. you know, for a lot of years here when I started on to beat Kyrie Saber, Chinedim Ndukwe, those guys. Sean Williams hasn't played as many snaps on safety that I think we all thought at the beginning of the year, but making plays on special teams. Jason DeMonch, kind of in that Dan Scuda mode of undrafted guy and now one of the leaders and bedrock on that defense. And I mean, Cedric Pierman keeps motoring along that, you know, I still think one time this year, Paul, we're going to see a fake punt, but it didn't happen against Cleveland. Who knows? Might happen sometime in the last five games.
Yeah, the Pierman special. But, yeah, a big game for special teams. And for them to start to develop, I think it just adds to the depth of this Bengals team. And they're, you know, and even some of those guys stepping up on defense, like you said, Vinny Ray. And we've seen snaps for DeMonch and J.K. Schaefer, and they're getting in there periodically when needed. And if somebody goes down, they're the next line of defense at this point because that unit is so battered. So that was a big development to come out of the game. Another interesting development came, sandwiching the big second quarter. That was the awful first quarter that occurred.
Ooh.
And Andy Dalton throws an interception that A.J. Green ends up saying he takes the blame for afterwards. You know, who actually is at fault at these? We don't really know. A lot of it's probably a combination of both, but miscommunication. The second one, another bad one, also forcing the ball to A.J. in traffic with Joe Hayden lurking. A.J. only ends up with two receptions for 7 yards. And Hayden gets the check mark. If we were still running Chad's boxes up on the side, yeah, the check mark would be on Hayden for sure. Has a big day. And then after the next series, which was just an awful one with a drop and a hold and a batted down pass for another three and out as things seemed to be spiraling out of control, the Boo Birds showed up. And they were loud. They were pretty loud. And I don't know, Joe, were you surprised to hear booing at that point?
No, not really.
Yeah.
You know me, having my finger on the pulse of Twitter sometimes too much.
Yeah.
You kind of look at things. I think there were screaming that could Josh Johnson come in? I'm done with this team. When does Red Spring training start?
Of course.
All those in full effect, but I mean, that's kind of the roller coaster with fans around here. And you know what? If you have season tickets and you pay as much money as they do, you then go, you know what? They have an investment in this team. They're shareholders, and they should have that right. And let's face it, after two straight games performing like they do and down 13 to Cleveland with what's expected from this team, yeah, they had the right to boo.
They did. Michael Johnson and the other members of the Bengals defense, but Michael Johnson as a spokesman on this topic, when asked about if he heard it and his thoughts on it, he said, and I'm going to sort of quote him here because I want to get to some other response from him rather than playing you this. He said, I don't appreciate that speaking for me. I don't appreciate it. Stay with us and believe with us. That's what you're here for if you're here to support us. If something bad happens, that's not our plan to go out there and have something bad happen. The negativity doesn't help. Stay positive. Stay encouraging. We'll fight. They know we'll fight. Just stick with us a while. And that was a part of it. He went on to basically say, if you're not believing and being positive, leave. We don't need you. And that brought up an interesting, I think.
Good up until that point. If he shuts it off there, I think we're fine.
Yeah.
But I think you'll have fans, season ticket holders and stuff, club suite holders who will be, wait a minute here.
Yeah. And I think the thing that I worry about, because this takes us back to, it's a topic that has been a hot one this year, booing at games. If you look back, the Reds maybe, that you could argue their biggest game of the season was filled with boos from the stands directed at Ryan Ludwig, who claimed that the fans needed to be more into it to help them out. and now arguably the biggest game to this point in the season was filled with boos at one point. Now with Andy Dalton, booing happens everywhere, and it's much more prominent in other media markets than this one. Philly, New York, hell, it's called a Bronx cheer. I mean, it is much worse out of other places, but the prevalence of this makes me start to talk about, okay, is this what is the role? What is a fan's purpose? To be entertained? I think most will say you're there. You paid your money. You're there to be entertained. Or are you there to be the 12th man, as Seattle sort of markets it? You're there to be another part of the team. And this team has made their living off of being resilient and never letting adversity get them down. And I think they would like what Michael Johnson was trying to get across was that they would like the fans to reflect what they see as their personality and to never get down or point fingers or boo. And I thought he was really good on Monday discussing that and what he meant and if he had any regrets and things like that. And that interview also ended up being hijacked by Carlos Dunlap, who just showed up and literally played the role of reporter perfectly, stone-faced, asking questions that aren't questions, just as we do many times, and was hilarious. So Carlos Dunlap will pop in the middle of this, but this is also Michael Johnson talking about his comments, talking about booing, and really you see what kind of a genuine guy he is and what he really is trying to get across to all of it. So here's Michael Johnson on Monday talking about his comments.
I had a comment yesterday, just frustration about the fans booing when you were down 13-0. Is that just something that grates on players? Or?
I don't think I said it out of hearing frustration. I was asked a question about what I thought about it, and I answered it. Excuse me. And it just goes back to, you know, when you're kids, everybody heard that. You don't have anything good to say, don't say nothing at all. Because, you know, being at home, I love playing at home. You know, we're undefeated at this. I love our fans. And they do a great job of, you know, being loud and making it tough for the other team. But, you know, but that's what we want them to make it tough for, the other team. and they understand that and they know that. But like I said, I was just answering a question that was asked to me.
You do a very good job at it.
And they understand exactly where I'm coming from. And, you know, we got three more home games, regular season home games. So, you know, we just prime them for this playoff run. And but yeah. So.
Have you heard from people since this?
You know, I got people. I had a lot of support on you know on the Twitter and stuff. People hit me and stuff, and it was a few negative stuff, but that's expected anytime. You have something to say. And, you know, some people don't agree, some people don't disagree. But as wise America, we all got a right to our opinion. Just like, you know, they have their right to disagree with, you know, with what they saw, with whatever made them, you know.
Right.
But honestly, that's counterproductive. And they know that. And I'm sure we won't have that problem anymore this year, so, or for the years to come.
So how do you feel going into the bye week?
Feeling pretty good, man. Got the win, and gonna go home and kick back a little bit, enjoy myself.
Back to Alabama, Southern?
Yes, sir.
Okay, back to the South.
What about you? Where you headed, sir?
I'm actually headed back to South Carolina.
Okay.
See the fam.
For how long?
Probably about 3 days.
Okay.
So we got a good bit of time to spread it out, you know?
Yeah.
How do you feel about the game yesterday?
I felt pretty good about it. You know, we were able to overcome adversity. And
it started off pretty rough in the beginning.
It was pretty rough, but we stuck together, you know. No one was finger-pointing. Nobody got down on each other on the sideline. And, you know, we just stayed focused and kept fighting. And come to find out, we set some type of record in the second quarter. I didn't even know we scored that much.
Right. Special teams came up huge.
They came up big time. Those guys play their butts off week in and week out, and they've been doing great for us this year. So proud of them and just excited to see what they can do for us in the next few games.
Yeah, I think all three of those plays came from young players. Two of them might have been rookies. And then
yeah, man, it's amazing. We got a great group of young core guys on this team. because, you know, it'll be awesome to be able to keep together for years to come. It's not a good thing going here.
Yeah, I'm most definitely looking forward to playing with you for the rest of my career.
Me too, big guy.
Good job, man.
You got a future, man.
Does he get a comments, right? You don't seem like you regret anything you said yesterday.
No. I know everybody's used to me giving the politically correct answers, you know, but I was asked a question, and I tried to answer it truthfully and from the heart, and, you know, I don't have any regrets about that, and, you know, anybody that knows me knows that, you know, it's genuine, you know, and we're here to win. You know, we want to win. It just as bad as it pains people watching the game when we don't do well, it hurts us 10 times more. And we're giving everything we got, and we're going to do that week in and week out. And, you know, you can take that to the bank.
I'm going to miss Michael Johnson next year.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate element of it, is it really how fans feel about him. I don't think it really matters. I mean, the money just doesn't work out. He's not going to be able to be back here. He's such a good guy.
Oh yeah,
he's an all-timer good guy around here in the community and with us. And you can hear it in his voice. He's so genuine. He just wants the fans to be on board and believe in them, and he doesn't want to have to deal with that. Basically,
yeah. Now, if he decides to take a nice little pay cut.
Little pay cut?
Well, a lot pay
a
cut.
Real big pay cut, yeah. If he wants to stay here.
Yeah, he can stay here, but let's face it, he's going to be one of the top free agents next year. And, you know, since Gino's been injured, he's ramped it up. And
yeah,
I think I said during that injury, Michael and Carlos are going to have to ramp it up. In the last two games, they've ramped it up and played well. You know, the sack numbers, maybe not like where you'd like it to be, but with a couple pass deflections,
Huge pass deflections, yes. In the game against Cleveland. Had the one where Greg Little was running all alone, basically saved 4 points,
yes.
by getting up and batting it down, and another one late in the game. I mean, you know, it was just he made big plays where he got the tip on the Harrison game changer. I mean, so you can credit him with arguably two of the biggest plays of the game.
Yeah, he's playing well, and as a leader on that defensive line, he should be playing well. But, you know, it's one of those things, Paul, and we're always in the delicate situation of trying to say fans, we don't like to say fans should do this or fans should do that, since, you know, we are there to work and are mm-hmm. getting paid, but also technically, we do get a free seat.
Sure do.
But
with a buffet.
Yes. But it's also one of those things, too, where when you have a franchise that hasn't won a postseason game in 22 years, and this franchise is supposed to take that next step this year, you've still got fans that are wondering if they should buy in or not. Mm-hmm. And technically, the game on Sunday was sold out, but, you know, due to weather and some stuff, there were a lot of empty seats. And
yes, fear of getting knocked out by a tornado probably did have
yes.
something to do with that. Yeah.
But, I mean, we have seen throughout this year where games are technically sold out in that middle level, known as the club seats,
yep.
known as the money makers, are, for the most part, not full. Large swaths of green.
Absolutely.
That you can see on television. And you got to get fans to buy in that way.
Yeah. They're wondering, you know, and that's where the boos come from. Is this is supposed to be, there's a lot of pressure on this year. It's one of those window years where the window's open, and the last thing they want to see is this team choke it away because of the lightning rod. For all criticism in Bengal land right now, if it's not Marvin Lewis, it is always Andy Dalton.
Yes, and he has not played well the last three games.
No.
He's played horrible. It was good Andy during October. It was bad Andy for two games, and yesterday, the game against Cleveland, you could term it raggedy Andy.
He was very raggedy.
Yeah, had spaces where he played well, but for the most part, did not play well that first quarter.
He made a few huge throws in that second quarter that really helped take that momentum created by the special teams and defense and capitalize on it. The pass to Gresham was a fantastic play where he had Andre Smith in his lap, unable to step forward, dropped a ball in between three guys for Gresham, who ended up making the tough play to get in. The pass to Sanu for the touchdown, another great pass and a nice route by Mo for his first touchdown of the year.
Yeah, totally faked out Chris Owens, mm-hmm. broke down in coverage and got it in there.
Those were huge plays. The rest of it left a whole lot to be desired. It was kind of the anti-Andy from the Miami game, where he was good for so long but had a couple throws that were complete disasters that ruined the entire game. This one, his disaster throws, did not ruin the entire game. Luckily, they came early and the Bengals were able to recover, but he made the two biggest ones of the day. He did make and let the special teams and defense take over. Well, and really, just running the clock out in the second half for the most part, just trying to end it. Made a few plays when necessary, but for the most part, heck, the last fourth quarter was 15 runs and one pass, which was the touchdown to Alex Smith. Yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't great, but the offense took
advantage of short fields too, which, yeah, let's face it, this offense hasn't exactly in the past taken advantage of stuff like that. I think two of three scoring touchdowns in the red zone, that got back up to a decent level and everything, but, you know, they took advantage of the short fields. But when you go who won this game, undoubtedly it was defense and special teams.
Yeah. And offense has won games for this team before in October.
Right.
I mean, Detroit, we've talked a lot about those games. Buffalo, I mean, you're talking about games where the defense gave up things and the offense found ways to win it for them. So it flips around. That's the thing is, and I think what was most evident in the Browns game, was this team has a very good way of exposing another team's weakness. Whatever that weakness is, because they're pretty well-rounded, outside of really the ups and downs of the quarterback, the Bengals in all three phases are pretty well-rounded, that if whatever your weakness is, they have been pretty good at finding ways to exploit it. That's how you end up 7-4. The Browns' weakness was their offense, and they really took advantage, and really, obviously, their special teams are punting as well, but they found ways to take advantage of an offense that didn't have a whole lot of weaponry.
And if I was a fan and I was analyzing this, your defense has lost arguably your two top players, Leon Hall and Geno Atkins. Defensive line's playing well. Secondary played a great game yesterday, with the exception of the Drake Kirkpatrick bomb, which, mm-hmm. you know.
Good coverage, but you got to locate the ball and get a handle on it.
And you can't be timid. You've got to attack and, you know, hell. You're up by that much in the third quarter. If you draw a P.I., you draw a P.I. Just be aggressive. Buck got his first sack. That's maturation process, learning, and you move on. But he's getting snaps. You see the secondary and defensive line playing well. The offense hasn't had anybody end up on injured reserve. And it looks like the unit that's had injuries and can't perform well.
Yeah, they've got everybody.
What the hell?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, now again, a pretty good Cleveland defense, but there have been some okay defenses that have. I mean, at some point you've got to beat good defenses.
Yeah.
I mean, they ran up 49 points on a Jets defense, which was fourth in the NFL. Coming, I mean, the bottom line is the consistency
A Detroit defense that has a very good defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
They took advantage of.
Yeah, it is clear. It is clearly, as we thought before the season started, the one unanswered question about this team is: will this offense be able to do enough to win big games? And you are entering December 1st, and there is still a big old question mark on that. And that is not good. And I think that might be why we saw a very, very feisty Marvin Lewis at Monday's press conference, who, you know, after a win, sometimes coaches want to try and make the point that we still suck and these guys better be working hard. Marvin clearly out to make that point today when he was getting after it, dropping an expletive. Just every question was given the treatment. We're pretty sure, actually, Joe, either we discussed this, we're pretty sure that actually Marvin probably should have just entered the press conference today with this theme music.
See, Paul, I think Marvin should enter every press conference like that, especially when I ask a question.
You're normally the object of pretty much every bit of anger. Every I hate everything by 3 days grace pretty much always comes directed at Joe Reedy.
By the way, Paul, since the podcast does come out on Tuesday, what is tonight?
Tonight is Beyond the Stripes with Paul Docker, presented by JosephAuto.com, featuring special guest Marvin Lewis. This ought to be
cue
fun.
The Bart Scott can't wait voice.
Boy, yes, exactly. It could be a real awkward invite. You know what? We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. You may want to come down just to watch the possible iciness that occurs. You think it's cold outside. It's going to be looking like they had all the windows open and a snowdrift was coming through onto that desk. If we get the same Marv that we saw today, who was out to prove a point. Maybe a little bit of time to cool off and a little bit more relaxed atmosphere. Maybe we can grab a glass of wine from behind the bar or something to hang out and loosen up with us a little bit.
He was on pure fire water this afternoon.
No doubt. And the topic that most irked his fire was that of Vontaze Burfict and his personal fouls that he's been collecting. So let's listen to Joe get railroaded by Marv.
I'm concerned about
the penalty we got yesterday, his other penalties, again, don't lump everything into one because you really don't know as much as you think you know. But the penalty yesterday, we can't have penalties. We had two penalties yesterday on defense that hurt us. Can't have those. And we got to clean them up as a football team. Well, this is not the WWF. And you don't get any points for retaliating, and that's bullshit. Stuff I read in the paper about it, it's not right.
Well, if you would have let me finish, there were those 15 yards against Buffalo that the league came back and said he shouldn't have.
He shouldn't have won.
They shouldn't have done the 15-yard penalties on that.
That's right. But, again, you don't know what the league says, and he doesn't need to tell you, nor will I ever tell you. So that's our business. It's going to stay within this house, and that's the way it's going to be. But we as a football team need to clean ourselves up and we need to do better. This is not acceptable and it won't be acceptable. And if we don't fix it, they won't play. So that's where we are with that.
On the other side.
It's a good mood today, I'm in, right?
Which really, Paul, every podcast we should have the Reedy Railroaded track.
The Reedy Railroad?
Which, you know, if Jeff Ruby is listening.
Oh, Jeff.
Fan of the podcast and things in general. Jeff, you know, if you want to sponsor the Reedy Gets Railroaded moment.
We know you'd like to be driving that train.
Yes. you know, we could always do the sponsor by Jeff Ruby's. Or, you know, we do have Joseph Auto. This could be the Joseph Auto drive.
Driving the game.
drive a press box drive question of the. Where I just get driven over and have tracks all over me.
Yeah, maybe we Photoshop a Marv with a conductor's hat and ride that up with our teaser for Tuesday night's show. But yeah, it should be a fun one. I highly recommend coming down to More Lion Lager House. You can get more of Marv and us. But let's
and who knows, Marvin might throw a football at my face.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that's the reason he signed up. So we're assuming that. But let's jump into this perfect topic here real quick. So we now have 6 15-yard penalties. How many of them are legit or not? I'm honestly done getting into that. I mean,
let's say 4.
Let's say 4 plus a couple that he got away with where the other guy got it. Regardless, Vontaze Burfict is always in the middle of these things. He just is. You know, you're looking at some of the stats today, he has allowed more first downs by penalty than any other player in football with 8. Nobody else has more than 6. I mean, you have six unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. I mean, it's too much. And like Marvin said, this isn't the WWF, although it is the WWE, as Jim Ross and Jerry King Lawler would gladly tell you right now. Some players, and Perfect himself, unapologetic for it. Marv obviously is sick of it. I guess the question is it a problem?
I think it can develop into one. Now, if you get a 15 for a late hit or something like Buffalo, you did get the league, supposedly according to Vontaze, and which will now be censored by Chairman Marv from now on, said the league sent him the letter and stuff and said, you know, you were fine on that. If it's 15 yarders because of that, I think coaches can go, you know, we can refine technique in something. Perfect example, Reggie Nelson, the past 2 years, the king of the 15 yarders.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect technique hit to force the ball away from Jordan Cameron. One of the Cleveland receivers on a deep route. Perfect. Lowered the target area, separated the ball. Perfect technique. Can you do that with Tez? I don't know. But if it's a 15-yarder because of the BS stuff,
then that's what it is. Yeah. It's mostly the stuff after the whistle. Between the whistle stuff, I think Marv's okay with. It's the after-the-whistle BS that's constantly happening, the constant pushing, the constant in-guys, whatever it is. It's always something, and he talked about this with us when we were in the scariest dungeon hotel room in Atlanta where the beds and everything were up on the walls. But Marv talked to us about it that day about this, the day after Perfect had jumped on Steven Jackson's back in a practice. It takes away from the great player that you are. Vontaze Burfict had the fourth best rated game since Pro Football Focus has been rating them, which is since about 2007, by any 4-3 outside linebacker. But what are we talking about?
That's pretty damn good.
That's pretty damn good. But what are we talking about? We're talking again about yet another person. What is Marv talking about? About yet another personal foul for misconduct. It's become part of his style and something that he looks at. And maybe that's part of his game. Maybe that's what makes him play great, because he plays great and he's an incredible football player. But it's one of those things that you cannot continue to give away first downs. They eventually will bite you for dumb things like that. Let Ray Maluga in the opener be an example. Eventually, something like that will absolutely kill you.
Right. And I think this is where eventually James Harrison comes in to help Tez, because James Harrison was king of 15-yarders, but that was for completely decapitating people on an open field and for aggressive plays and hits that way. This stuff is things that you can control. That you can, just through your maturity and stuff, that you can control. And everybody still has the opinion and remembers that guy from Arizona State 2 years ago. He had a great year last year, but he was still mostly under the radar. The radar has accelerated this year. He had an NFL Network feature, which was well done, except they tried to portray Dan Horde and Dave Lapham as Arizona State announcers with a little creative license that they shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
But I digress.
Yes.
He's getting more and more of a name. The more and more this team is successful, that name will develop. People, though, still remember the guy from Arizona State. And when you do crap like this, that opinion remains.
Yeah. It does, and it's a shame, because he is playing his face off this year.
Yeah,
I mean, the way he's playing football is incredible. His instincts on the field and his aggressiveness and really game changing. He's been, you know, we've talked about him as an MVP candidate on this team, And it would be a tough thing to debate at this point because he's been unbelievable. He is a great player, but that crap is it's a part of his game right now.
Yeah, and that's the and that's the major thing that we talk about right now, which we, you know, unfortunately the topic's brought up. The history's there, and until like in the case with Harrison, I can take 15-yard penalties for aggressive play because, let's face it, the league now, you don't know what an aggressive play penalty is anymore. You just don't. It depends on your officiating crews. But the extracurricular BS is another matter, and Marv tried to do the, well, there's some things you don't understand and don't see. Yeah, Marvin, the last time you gave me that explanation, Fontez was fined $10,000 for a nut shot that he didn't get penalized for.
Right. Yeah, claiming that we didn't see what was really happening.
Well, the
everyone did.
Yeah.
It was actually in gift form on every single website.
Yes. Yes. The drones you are looking for are not here. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, come on, Marvin.
Yeah.
Give us a break on this.
But, you know, Vontaze Burfict is playing great, and that Bengals defense is playing great, and that's why at the end of the day, same way you've said the last few years, this team has a chance in the postseason because of them, even despite all the injuries. No Leon, no Geno, eight guys on injured reserve. You know, they're still playing great football. They've been holding just about every team they see down, and they really rattled Cleveland and Jason Campbell. And we'll see what happens down the stretch now as you've got five games in the 2.5-game lead, and you look at the glut of nastiness in the AFC, you have the Chiefs, Broncos, loser will be that 5 seed at this point. That makes getting out of that 4 a real big deal.
Extremely.
And you have the Patriots, which we're recording this before the Monday Night Football game, so we don't know the result of their game. You've got the Colts a half a game ahead of the Bengals, and the Patriots currently won. So you'll have the Colts coming to Cincinnati in 2 games from now. That would be a massive game when it comes to standings.
But before that, the Colts get to go to Arizona this Sunday, where old friend Carson Palmer could help out.
Yep.
CP with a big game in against Jacksonville Sunday. Mm-hmm. Kind of looked like the CP of 2005 pre-knee injury.
And Bruce Arians might know a thing or two about how to slow down the Colts.
You think?
Yeah. So, I mean, and you've got the Patriots in the middle of a rough 2-game stretch where they've got Peyton Manning come to town next week after Carolina. The schedule is tougher. The Bengals have the advantageous schedule now going down the stretch. Only one team with a winning record right now. That's the Colts. You've got 4-6 San Diego, 4-6 Baltimore. They're playing pretty much everybody in that 4-6 glut that's fighting for the 6th seed, which is amazingly held by the Jets right now, of all teams. And Geno Smith, the pick 6 extraordinaire, Geno Smith somehow has a team in the 6. That's how weak that 6th seed is right now.
However, the Jets, who go win-loss, 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 game 11 is at Baltimore this Sunday.
Yeah, a close-to-elimination game for the Ravens.
Right.
As they're trying to chase down the Jets. So, the action, there's a lot. There's really only 2 teams in the AFC that are really eliminated. Jacksonville, who was eliminated in week 1, and Houston, who would have thunk that? Houston lost 8 in a row.
I'm sad we're not going to Houston for a playoff game.
I'm sure you are, Joe.
But we'll go to Houston next year. But also, in this week in the AFC North, which if you want to sponsor it, like we said, you can you can join us. Cleveland-Pittsburgh could be a little bit of an elimination game this week.
You're right.
Because at worst, the Bengals come back, there'll be 2 games in front of somebody, mm-hmm. just based on that game alone. But then, Thanksgiving night, Pittsburgh and Baltimore.
Yep.
In Charm City. That could be an important division game, too, because you know, if Baltimore and Pittsburgh both win on Sunday, then, you know, could that become, in essence, another elimination?
Steelers becoming a scary team again a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're starting to reel off some wins, and their 2 Sean Schwesham misses from being sitting in the driver's seat for that sixth seed. Hard to believe, but Big Ben has kind of thrown that team on his back a little bit, and Dick LeBeau is trying to his darndest to do work magic with a bunch of old guys.
And I also think these rumors about Ben and trade, Ben's become a little galvanized over Pierce. That.
Well, people are now starting to talk about this contract situation that he'll have and if he's going to deserve the money, and that's where the trade rumors are coming from, is that they're basically saying, is it worth it to pay a 32-year-old Ben Roethlisberger? It's a legitimate question. We'll let you listen to a Pittsburgh podcast for that, but the bottom line is that's where they come from. But, yeah, he's definitely playing better. Luckily, Joe, we don't have to worry about much of that this week because we get to take a weekend off. Holy crap, thank God. I don't know if the players need it more or if we need it more. I mean, it's time. We just need to kick back and relax is the key.
The last round of byes, Paul, how I long for the week six or week seven byes from now on. This week 12 bye.
It's all home stretch from this point. You get into the playoff chase. Things are all the storylines. And we're starting to look at big picture and seeding. It's a lot more. We're through the mundane area. We're now into the byes. We're past the bye, and it's going to be a time to just relax and then cruise on into the playoffs and see what happens from there. And God knows what could happen there, but we will see.
Right.
Regardless, you can find us this week doing what the Eagles love to sing about. So we're going to go out listening to the Eagles because we're classic rock guys.
Yes.
You know,
we're also trying to get back from street cred.
Yes, and maybe also trying to let it out there for anybody that has connected to U.S. Bank May 3rd, that the Eagles are playing, that, hey, I wouldn't mind a couple of free tickets. I'm an Eagles guy.
There you go.
Yeah, it's just as Butchie Hobson is, and I plan on Butchie standing right next to me as we go to check out the Eagles.
Yeah, I want to see that concert photo.
Oh, it would be fantastic. So, anyway, as always, Beyond the Stripes will be Tuesday night, 7 o'clock more in Logger House. Special guest Marvin Lewis. Come see the fun Eagles.
And if you say you listen to the podcast, one of us might buy you a beer.
You never know. You never know. So we want to thank Joe Reedy, of course, and always thank the Eagles for bringing with us as we're going to go. We're going to be taking it easy. So
and Paul, I want to thank you.
Oh, let's thank everyone. It's a big. And we're all so happy because it's the bye week. It's just nothing but happy. Just the lollipops and unicorns. So anyway, have a good one. We'll talk to you next week on Scribe Session.
Take care, everyone. The sound.